Hi, Amy. Thank you for joining me to talk about your book, Championing Science, and what you've been doing with that.
Well, it's terrific to have a chance to get together with you because we both care a lot about helping people be understood. And for me, it's about the spoken word, for you, the written word. But together, that's what enables people to get their ideas across.
Exactly. There's a lot of overlap here, but there's a different set of skills to do it in real time. I think it may be easier to do in writing because you have revision, which you don't have when you're speaking, right?
Good point. Yeah. Well, that just means that when you're speaking, you've got to have forethought and you have to practice. And you know what happens all too often, particularly with the scientists and technologists that I pay most attention to, is that they're so caught up in the details of their ideas that they get tripped up in all of that instead of understanding how to bring their ideas up to the surface so those of us who don't have our scuba tanks on can be there with them, right? And understand.
Right, precisely. So when you're speaking, it's easier in the sense if your audience is right there with you, you get to see the dazed and confused look on their faces if they are dazed and confused, which as writers, we don't get to see that. But it is harder because they have to do it in real time.
And there are often times where speakers are so caught up in what they're saying, they don't notice. And that's one of the things that's important to learn is not just to notice, but what to pay attention to. What are the cues that are important? And I've just launched online, the first of three online courses that's aimed at teaching those kinds of fundamental skills. So it's really exciting.
Brilliant. You're doing very important work. So good for you. Thank you. But let me ask you about your book, which is Championing Science, right? Tell me, describe to me the core audience for the book and what you hope to achieve with it.
Well, the book is aimed at anybody who is in the science and engineering and technology arena who wants to be effective with decision makers. So there are a lot of great books out there about communicating science to the public. What my husband Roger and I focused on in writing Championing Science was talking to decision makers, talking in the workplace, helping to get your ideas across to smart people who aren't necessarily experts, who are in a position to advance your work. And the inspiration for the book really comes from a shared belief he and I have that we need all the great ideas out there to help change the world. And if you've got ideas, but you can't express them well, they can go unnoticed. And ideas have to be heard and understood if they're going to drive action. So for us, the goal was to shorten the learning curve. We really are interested in reaching graduate students, postdocs, early career STEM professionals to shave a number of years off what you ultimately learn as you get out into the workplace.
That's great. Yeah, just speed them down the path to being more effective, communicating and advocating for what's important.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've seen both of us in our respective careers. Roger's a scientist. He's been with Lawrence Livermore National Lab for 35 plus years. And the book was actually his idea. He pitched it to me on a long car ride down to see my parents. And that was before he proposed marriage. He thought we should write a book together. Yeah.
Well, one of them is the acid test for the other. I'm not sure which how that goes. Okay.
Well, he would tell you that he was pretty sure what I would say when he asked me to marry him, but he wasn't so sure about the book request. So anyway, it ended up being about 6 years from start to finish, lots of interruptions along the way. But our opportunity was to interview scientists, identify good communicators, really zero in on what are the key principles that make someone effective. And so that's the nature of the book. It talks about what we call 11 tenets for championing science. And it also reinforces the importance of becoming very self-aware and self-correcting, because that's what it takes to get good at effectively communicating complex ideas.
Yeah. It's a learning curve like anything else. It may not have all of the prestige of learning, you know, how to splice a gene or something, but it is a learning curve nonetheless.
Yeah, and one of the things that makes it tricky is that when you think about how scientists and technologists are minted, they become experts, right? And when they go all the way through PhD programs, they are in such an echo chamber, typically for a fairly long time, right? So as I like to say, it's not your fault if you're not good at this. You've had professors making you drink from a fire hose. You were taught that you have to value precision and accuracy above anything. And I want my scientists and engineers to be precise, I do. But when you're communicating ideas that people don't know enough about, you can't start at precision. Yeah. You have to balance precision and impact. And that's a really important principle.
That's great. Yeah. And you know, the other issue you talk about, you know, there's something they call the curse of knowledge, which is very hard to know, remember what you didn't, what it was like not to know the thing you know. And when you've been so immersed in graduate studies, everyone around you all knows that stuff. It's like the water you're swimming in, and it's really hard to remember what it was like before you were in the water.
Absolutely. Yeah. We talk about that in slightly different terms. We talk about it as the notion of paradigm, and that there is always some kind of paradigm gap between you and the people listening to you. And paradigm to us is all the things you know about a subject, what you've studied, what you've researched, what you've learned from the various people you talk to, and the beliefs and mindsets that are formed as a result of that. So it goes beyond knowledge. It's really about how you think about your topic. And when you start to understand and become conscious of that notion for yourself as a scientist, and you start to ask yourself, who's listening to me and where are they and how big is that gap? It helps you understand how to adjust what you say.
Yes. Yeah. That's a really interesting lens to put on it, that we're all operating in different paradigms, and without understanding your own, you can't understand what other people's might be.
Yes. And without understanding just how much it gets in the way. It is, you know, at the core, in our view, the foundational thing that gets in the way. And, you know, you layer on top of that the fact that you're detail-oriented people if this is what you choose to study in your life, right?
Right.
So the typical way that a scientist talks is with very, very long, complicated sentences that go on and 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 on. And sometimes they even speak in monotone voices so that you get this on and on and on and on and on and on. And, you know, Roger would talk often about the seminars he'd listened to, the conferences he'd been at, and just how pitiful the speakers were. So we're trying to change that, in part to make it easier to go to conferences.
Yeah, exactly. That is too also a worthy mission.
Exactly. Yeah, well, you're talking about impact, right? Let's just like get to this sort of, and really also in today's world where we are all, because of COVID, spending so much time on Zoom, oftentimes it's just your voice and a little tiny picture of you that people are listening to. So, you know, learning how to communicate clearly, effectively, succinctly, all of those things are so important, in many ways, even more so now.
Right. Yes. It really is about respect for your audience, you know, which is something when you put it in that perspective, it might makes you think about it a little differently too.
And I don't use the term audience often. I tend to talk about listeners, and I do it very purposefully because I want to remind the person speaking of two things. It's their responsibility to be understood and to keep those people interested in listening to them.
That's
right. And it's a conversation. It's not just get up and, you know, go through all your slides and never look up and never check in with people. It's a dialogue. And I think the other thing that makes it feel really good to have this work and the book out in the world, it was published by University of California Press in January of 2019, is that it's becoming so clear that scientists need to be able to communicate more persuasively.
Yes, yes.
And I sat in on an interesting webinar this morning that Quartz put together. And one of the speakers on the panel, he took my question, which was, what advice do you have for scientists to be more effective communicating to decision makers? And the net of what he said was, scientists don't feel like they know something unless they know it with certainty. And if you can't be 100%, they tend to explain what they know by talking about what they don't know. Instead of saying, we know this for sure right now, based on all the data we have, we know that it's 6-to-1 improvement in the well-being of your coworkers if all of you wear masks in this COVID time when you go back into an office space. We know that.
Right.
Instead of saying, well, we can't say with certainty that everybody will be safe, you know? And so that shift, that flip-flop of what you start with what you know, acknowledge that you don't have all the answers, acknowledge that more data continues to stream in,
right?
But give people the benefit of what you do know. And I thought his answer was really compelling.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. That makes a lot of sense. And there is that, you know, that desire to be completely accurate, which is probably beaten into you in graduate school, and to defend your thesis and do all those things, right? I mean, it's got to be so honed, and it has to be flipped on its head, not to be inaccurate, but to be, you know, there's some research that the more people hear something out in the world, read something, whatever, the more time something appears, the greater the impression they have of it being true. So if you are hesitant to say that thing that is pretty darn sure, you are actually, you know, taking away the frequency of the things that people should be hearing, right? Mm-hmm, which is the things that we are pretty darn sure is true.
Right.
And so accuracy, you know, chasing it to that degree is can be actually damaging, because it gives more airtime to all of the doubt, all the uncertainty. And if people, when people aren't paying a whole lot of attention, the thing they've heard most is the thing that they remember. And if it's all the doubts, then that's what they're going to remember. And so
absolutely.
And you actually have a duty. You have a duty to share what you know. Yeah.
I agree completely. And I think for scientists in particular, recognizing that voice is so important for them to have out in the world is new to a lot of them. And they don't fully appreciate what gets in their way. And in order to make the shift, they have to understand it. And I think it starts way back when you're doing your first science fair. If you think about science posters from grade school, they're so complicated. They have all kinds of stuff on them. And it just goes from there. So if you think about it, it's sort of minted in from a very early age. And the other thing that I see as an issue, and one that I try to help scientists understand, is that you might think that if you don't sound academic and if you don't show all your work, that people are going to doubt your rigor and your expertise. And that's not true.
Right. Right.
What's true is that if you can articulate things succinctly and clearly, and if you can take people along with you and layer information when they're ready to hear it, you are going to be much more effective in your work.
That's right. I mean, if you're doing the peer review publications, go ahead, put in all the stuff that you need to put in. But if you're writing for the masses, if you're writing for the larger audience, not your just your peers, absolutely. Yeah. So tell me, because I have to ask and I'm curious. So you wrote this book with your husband. Tell me about that process. How did that go?
We had a lot of fun. We would joke often that we were nerding out together, and it was such a fun experience. And it was easy for us to do, in part because we have different areas of expertise. So we mapped out our outline. We knew which chapters we were each taking the lead on. We respect each other a lot. We have very different voices. If you read our book, you will know what Roger wrote. You'll know what I wrote. Very different styles, very different voices, but complementary. And we had a blast. Our one bit of contention was over the editing process, and it had nothing to do with the words. It had to do with the fact that he likes those little tabs that have a colored end on them. And I am more efficient, so I would flag a page and draw lines to the various things that needed to be changed. He wanted one tab per change. And I said, okay, but we're running out of tabs, babe. And we agreed that it was really important to him, and it was really easy for me to give on that. So yeah, it was really a great experience for us to do together. And we still do a fair amount together these days, but he's got a day job as the chief scientist at Lawrence Livermore working on climate issues. So I tend to do a bit more of what you and I are spending time on than he has time to do. But we do still collaborate, and give each other a lot of support.
That's great. And I love it that your biggest disagreement was over office supplies. I mean, basically,
right? The use of office supplies.
The use of office supplies.
I was trying to be more efficient and yes, that was it.
That is a great story. So the book's been out for a year and a half, just about, right?
Yes.
So what has been the impact of that book? I mean, what have you seen?
Well, we've had the opportunity by invitation to get out into the world through the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science. We were asked to do a couple of webinars for them. We did one on our 11 principles for championing science and another on building trusted relationships and influence with sponsors. We were also asked to do a full day workshop for students at UCLA. And have been doing a number of speaking engagements at postdoc events. Stanford's got us lined up to do their virtual keynote for the next postdoc seminar they're doing. So I share all those appearances to say that we're getting word out into the world.
Good.
And you know, more and more people are learning about the book. And now the next step for me has been to look at the opportunity to create online curriculum, because what I really see, Anne, is a curriculum gap. And in some ways, even if there were communication courses to take, you know, if you're working on your PhD, chances are you're not going to spend time on that.
Yeah.
So I think the opportunity to have an even bigger impact is as a result of online learning. There are great platforms out there. I've just launched my first course called How to Bridge Communication Gaps. And I created on a platform called Kajabi, which was quite a learning curve for me, but a really terrific format for putting a course together. And I have two more in the works. And the goal is to get to more and more postdocs and early career STEM professionals.
Great. Yeah, the courses are a different way to reach people. It's a different way to scale out your message, which is really wonderful.
Well, and I think that when it comes to really learning these skills, it's one thing to tell you what to do. And I spend a lot of time explaining how to do it. Literally, how do you have this conversation? What are the questions you ask? What specifically do you watch for when you're looking for someone's nonverbal feedback? I get really specific about that, which would be difficult to do in a book. Having online curriculum and, you know, the use of video makes it so much easier to really drill that in. And at some point I'll do some things that are live with students, but I really wanted to have some evergreen material that I think as the fundamental things you need to know. And I'm basically distilling my 40 years, 20 spent in corporate roles and the last 20 spent consulting, working predominantly with technical folks, scientists, engineers, and in the tech and biotech industries. So I know what's going to make a difference, and that's what I've been working to put together in this program.
That's great. So you started with the book, and the process of writing the book really codified, right? I mean, did it really distill, as you wrote the book, did you really distill your tenets and your practices that then is feeding everything else?
Yes, those principles are kind of at the core of what's continuing to be the focal point of the curriculum. And, you know, it was interesting for me personally. Communications just made sense to me from my earliest days. And I remember thinking, oh, this is such an easy major, until I got out into the business world and I realized that I knew things that so many people didn't know or understand that made a real difference. And writing the book with Roger helped me appreciate the value of what I know. And now taking it out into the world and teaching and lecturing and building workshops and now creating this online material is helping me feel like at this stage in my career, I can have an even bigger reach and impact, because if the people who learn from me are better able to make their ideas happen, the world can be a better place. And that is really motivating. And I have to say, working on the courses during this COVID situation has really kept me feeling very driven by a purpose and energized despite the gloom and overlay that we're all dealing with right now.
Yeah. There's nothing quite like having a purpose, to have that future orientation, to have, you know, what the work you're doing is important. That's very motivating. And
I think it saved my sanity.
Yeah.
Really do.
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah. These are strange times indeed. And having something that you feel is for a greater long-term good really keeps us going.
Absolutely. And I get really excited. I've always been a cheerleader. I like helping people be successful. And I do a lot of resume support for people whose kids are graduating and, you know, always like helping people figure out how to tell their story. And so this is just, you know, kind of an extension of that part of who I am. And it does feel very purposeful. And I'm really glad Roger had the idea to write the book, because I never thought about putting it in a book. And what we were able to do together, I think, is laying a foundation for some important things to happen.
Yes, indeed. So let me just ask if there's any advice that you would give to someone else who wanted to write a book that had a similar purpose. So not necessarily scientific communication, but someone wanting to, who has a message, who has a purpose, and they want to write a book. What would you advise?
I would say two things. Believe in yourself and don't stop writing until you finish it.
Yeah.
Because good. I think it's really easy for people to doubt themselves as writers and doubt that what they have to say matters. And that's, to me, the opportunity to sit back and reflect and trust that the reason you are inspired to write it is because people out there need to read it.
Yes. Yes, that's great. Yeah, and keep going. I wonder if it helped you in the sense, being as part of a team, you each reinforced the value of the other's contribution, and that maybe kept the flywheel moving there on that point.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. It yeah. did. It yeah. absolutely did. And it was even bigger than that for us. So we started working on the book in 2013. And we were married in 2014. And shortly after we were married, Roger was diagnosed with colon cancer.
Oh.
So we had a big curveball. And the book was something that gave us another purpose as he was going through everything he had to go through. And I'm glad to be able to tell you that he is fine. He's survived it. And
good.
Been 5 years and all is good. But the book was something that really helped us have something else to think about and focus on. It's also the reason it took 6 years. We kind of had some interruptions in that process, but it was something that helped sustain us and something that gave us both a sense of why it was so incredible that we found each other in the world, because it's a second marriage for both of us.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful. So you're doing this wonderful, purpose-filled book for the world at large, but it rebounds on you in the sense of the benefits of it, certainly giving you that purpose and that something to get you through. That's a wonderful story. Thank you.
Yeah, it is. It's a pretty magical story. We both feel so fortunate. Yeah. So fortunate.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for sharing the story of the book. I will include links so people can find it. And I am very excited to read it, because I think we are so aligned, and I can hardly wait to learn from what you are writing about. Maybe some of it applies to writing as well. So,
well, thank you.